Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
Thank you so much for joining us, everybody. It's a real pleasure to have you here. It's also a pleasure to welcome back for part two of our series together on Close Up Radio, counselor and consultant, Mandy Fridger. Mandy is an acclaimed licensed professional counselor specializing in energy psychology techniques. In a career spanning over 20 years, as we mentioned on the previous episode, I encourage you to go back and listen to the incredible conversation we had last week. Mandy has treated a wide range of issues for people struggling with trauma and anxiety, depression, grief, relationship issues, and autism spectrum disorders, cognitive disorders, and peak performance as well. And her distinctive approach combines energy therapy techniques and principles of applied behavioral analysis to treat a myriad of these issues effectively and successfully. AP, of course, a growing field of practice incorporating numerous different mind-body health approaches that join energy modalities with cognitive processing to shift the energetic and emotional blocks detained in the body from previous traumas. And some of those well-known examples of EP, as we mentioned, are emotional freedom techniques, thought field therapy, energy medicine, TAPIS acupressure technique, advanced integrative therapy, and EMDR. And through our conversations, we've been talking about the ways that she works with her clients, which is really incredible. She's also excited to announce, which we'll talk about on this episode, her upcoming book, From Exhausted to Energized, The Autism Spectrum Disorder Caregiver's Guide, scheduled to come out next year. Join me in welcoming Mandy back to Close Up Radio for part two of our series together. Mandy, welcome back. It's a pleasure to have you with us today.
Hi, great to be back.
You know, we were talking quite in-depthly last week about autism spectrum disorder, and I know you wanted to tap into the caregiver side of all of this as well, and you and I were talking at great length before we went on with our pre-conversation about how the caregivers sometimes are the often forgot lot. They, you know, what they do and the amount of emotion and the amount of time and attention that they put in can be unprecedented, and it takes a toll on the caregiver as well. Let's talk a little about and flip into the world of the caregiving side of all of this.
Yeah, this became a passion of mine after working with kids with autism spectrum disorders for a while. I mean, actually quickly, when I was doing in-home treatments, you know, we were working with the parents a lot to transition skills and to teach them best practices. And then when I went to center-based practice, I still noticed this overwhelming stress that these caregivers had, but it really was a little bit different. And I like to think of caregivers for those who are diagnosed with autism spectrum disorders as a really specific subpopulation of caregivers. And they do have a lot of challenges, but there are some things that I think are different. And this is what I've learned through my work with these caregivers, is that, you know, kids are usually diagnosed with autism spectrum disorders when they're young. And so many times it starts out with family supports that families don't quite understand when they see a child who looks like they're acting out, like I talked a little bit about the diagnostic criteria last week, and they look like they're just not being managed well, that this is something that the parent, you know, it's essentially their fault. And that's, you know, myth number one, that's not always true. You know, this is a very different, again, these behavioral demonstrations are very different than just, you know, oppositional or, you know, kids who have behavioral demonstrations who just don't want to follow through with something. So this presents problem number one for these caregivers. And then, again, to be very honest, I hear this a lot, but then the judgments from family members are secondary to that, thinking, you know, if that parent would only do X, Y, or Z, or, you know, that child needs something else. And that's really hurtful for the family members because it starts to open up a can of worms and it really goes down a path that is not supportive in, I'm going to say, like the shorter long run. Because there's a lack of education and the parent feels unsupported, they start to, you know, distance themselves from those family members, whether it's by their choice or sometimes they're just rejected and not wanted around because of the child's behaviors. So this lack of support starts very early on, and unfortunately it can start to the people who are literally closest to home, the people that are in their home or their closest relatives and friends. So this is one disadvantage that I think caregivers of this subpopulation have. And then the other pieces that I've seen, and this is another reason that I was really motivated to do some research and then write the book, is that the typical interventions for people who have stress and who are caregivers really are not time efficient. And this population, the subpopulation of these parents and caregivers, don't have a lot of time to be able to, I don't know, maybe go to the gym 3 times a week. You know, that's an hour bus travel time. But the bigger piece of that is supervision for the child. You know, if the child's not in school or, you know, maybe they are in school, but, you know, they are on call because there's some things going on at school. So it's a lot of the traditional interventions are not really applicable for this population. I mean, quiet your mind, meditation, all of those things. It creates a very different sense and start of worry and lifelong worry when you're a parent of a child who's diagnosed, because there's safety issues, there's all kind of things that really do require a sense of urgency. So it's very hard for this subpopulation to sort of slow down and do some of the traditional things that are recommended. So this is where the energy psychology comes in for me, and this is what prompted me to write the book. I started teaching this, and I thought, you know, I should probably just put this together so I can get it out for the masses with a few tools that are actually quick and doable at home for the subpopulation of parents and even teachers and, you know, aides, people that come into the home, and family members who do support the parents or the caregivers and are babysitting. So these energy psychology tools are relatively quick. You don't need an hour. You don't need to leave the house. You know, 2 to 5 minutes a couple times a day is certainly more doable than hours and hours of try to decompress and relaxation exercises that do take a lot of time. So I really am geared toward this subpopulation for the book because there are a lot of other stresses that we don't see. And I mean, the list is so long, I couldn't possibly talk about them all in this segment here, but for other people to be aware of what these parents are going through and caregivers and even teachers who have special education classes or are teaching autism support classes, as some of them are called. This is a different way to teach. It's a different approach with behavior modification, and you really have to stay on your toes a little bit more than, say, you know, a classroom of 25 kids who aren't diagnosed necessarily. There's times that you can turn your back to that class, not for very long, but a little bit. And this is not the same in these type of classrooms. So these caregivers, I really do think, need their own tools, and they need something consistent, and they need to be heard. They need to be heard that this stress is real. I mean, anyone's perception of their own stress is real, but this is really taxing to the energy system of the body.
Yes, absolutely. Mind, body, and spirit, definitely. I'm excited, and congratulations, too, with the book. And I think the title is so perfect, From Exhausted to Energized, the Autism Spectrum Disorders Caregiver's Guide, that's scheduled to come out next year. For you, What has the writing process been like? Is it cathartic, therapeutic? Tell us a little bit about the writing process and what inspired you to want to write this book.
Well, a lot of people set out, you know, in their life and say, you know, my goal is to write a book, and that was not mine.
Yeah, right.
So this inadvertently happened because, as I mentioned, I was enmeshed in this field, and I was seeing it, and I was trying to pinch it, so to speak, with my staff who were in the school-based program at the time and the parents that I worked with, trying to help them manage their stress levels so they could deliver the job that they needed to do. And so I began to teach this at conferences, and I had a talk show for about 6 months, and I packaged an outline of how I wanted to explain and teach these things. And after, you know, after I was done with those couple things, I thought, you know, I'm saying the same things over and over again. This can reach more people if I would just package this into a text. So people who weren't in the Pittsburgh area or just didn't know about me word of mouth or weren't coming to a presentation really could get their hands on something quantitative in what I was saying. So the writing process was a little disjointed, to be honest, because I was doing these other things and just really wanted to put it together. But the outline has always been in my mind about how I wanted to lay this book out. What were the important things? And I talk in the book about having a really good skill set for the caregivers, meaning that if they don't have the appropriate training, that they seek it out the best they can and learn about the diagnosis, learn about, you know, research-based interventions that are tried and true, such as ABA. And I still hold firm that I'm a behaviorist, even though I do energy work too. My kind of running joke is that if you're doing energy psychology techniques, you are doing behavior modification, even if you don't think about it that way, because we're always trying to change, you know, thought, feeling, and any way you look at it leads to a change in behavior. So that was the platform that I really wanted to share with everybody about, you know, the skills, and then there's the willingness, which this is sort of the elephant in the room that we're not talking about a lot, but at some point, you know, I think we are in the past couple of years with COVID, just with parenting in general, and how people are, you know, have had their kids home for a long time and that are stressed and it's hard to manage everything. So I think it's gotten a little bit more socially acceptable, and people are more empathetic to the stress of just caregiving for a child, but there are some times where, you know, people just want to say, I'm done with this, and I can't do this another day. And certainly for the subculture of these parents, this is a subpopulation of kiddos that take a lot of work if you want your child to develop functional life skills. And it takes a lot of work early on, and it quite frankly never ends. It really does continue through adolescence and young adulthood, because we can continue to learn, and, you know, it's the same with this population. So the willingness sometimes just isn't there, or people are completely burnt out, right, or I can't do this anymore. And so we put those two elements together, the skill and the will, and we look at them. And I have a lot of different types or dispositions, as we're calling them in the book, to examine where a person might be at in the moment with their skill set and with their willingness to do this type of work. The other piece that I've added to this, the skill and the will piece, is pretty traditional for a lot of different, you know, human resources sort of framework of employees. But the piece that I'm adding to this as far as these caregivers is the energy field and what we call the biofield. So how is their energy level, or how is their energy that's real? We know it's real. We can see it now in the body with our new technology. Maybe we couldn't 20 or 30 years ago, but we know that this concept of our bodies being energetic is a real thing. And how does that energy then impact the skill and the will? And how do these three work in tandem? And how do we get them to work in tandem if they're not? So that's what the book is really focusing on, the pieces of the skill I talk a lot about. And then the willingness can get hard, because I do break down a lot of the different stressors that happen through the lifetime, again, for other people to really have empathy for this population of caregivers, because it really is different. And then how do we look at the energy that a lot of people aren't talking about, that piece, and put this all together to maximize these caregivers' success and resiliency.
Which is really the name of the game. It's really so absolutely important. And what do you hope people are left with upon reading the book? Is the book designed for a specific reader, or is it across the board?
Well, one of the goals I did have in mind was I really wanted this to be across the board. I'm thinking about the parents who are going to read this and who are saying, yes, that's me. Yes, that's me the whole way through. Chances are they've thought about this before, right? And they've been on some sort of course of learning or track about this. But really, the people that are significant are those immediate family members and the friends and the caregivers around them. So I thought it was important that anybody could pick this book up and pretty much start, you know, at basic 101, even just about learning about autism spectrum disorders. So it's not overwhelmingly deep about the diagnosis, but it does paint a pretty good picture about, you know, oh, wow, I didn't know that this is really part of the way that this neurology works with this type of diagnosis. This isn't just, you know, my grandson being bad, or this isn't my daughter or son not having parenting skills. This is different. And so I really thought it was important that this book should be for the masses, although it really is directed. And I think that caregivers and teachers of caregivers of all sorts will really resonate with a lot of the content. And they will have some takeaways with this piece of the energy psychology and integrating that, because most people haven't heard that. Amongst my colleagues who are longtime energy practitioners, I can only think of a handful who specialize in working with kids with either intellectual disabilities or autism spectrum disorders. And the people that do, I'm not sure that they consider themselves necessarily specialists or experts in it. It's just that, you know, there's really nowhere for this population to go in terms of expertise other than behaviorists. And so I talk about that in the book too, and I really want to open this up for outpatient therapists to embrace this population if they're not comfortable or they feel like they're going outside their scope of practice working with the people who are diagnosed with autism spectrum disorders. At least say, you know, maybe I can help you, or what can I do for you, caregiver, and embrace this a little bit more, because outpatient therapists who work with stress and anxiety really do have tools for this subpopulation. And I say this in a lot of my interviews, but I also think it's important that, you know, caregivers, I'm going back on that time management piece, that they don't have a lot of time. But really, if you get the right type of therapy and it's a good match for you, then that hour a week is worth it. Or we have to put on our masks before we can help anybody else. So, yeah.
That's so true. Exactly. You know, I had to learn that myself, too, that, you know, because I'm always running to the aid of somebody else, and it is really, really important to learn to be able to put the mask on yourself before you run to the aid of everybody else. You got to have that oxygen, right? It's crucial.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it takes mm-hmm. us a while to learn that.
Yeah. If anything, the other thing I'd want to mention today, and this is just a little bit more of a broad suggestion for those people listening out there. If you are resonating with any of this, or if you're not and you're just listening to Mandy Fridger and want to hear about the energy techniques and you're thinking, you know, I've thought about outpatient therapy, but I'm not sure. I'm going to say to the people out there, if you're on the fence, try to find a therapist now, because since COVID's happened, a lot of us I was just reading an article in the New York Times about this. The waiting lists are very long, and there have been a lot of telehealth platforms who have tried to, you know, open this for the masses, such as a teledoc kind of services. But even those services really aren't meeting the need. So I'm going to say, if you're on the fence at all, try to reach out, get on a waiting list. It may or may not be the right match for you. You can always change your mind, but rather than 3 months down the road say, geez, I wish I would have at least pursued that, and you're still on a waiting list, I would really encourage you to look now.
Very important, right? Incredibly important. Because one of the best investments that you can make in life is in yourself, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Self-care is number one. And I also like to teach to other therapists about the energy psychology techniques because they're useful as a therapist, as an outpatient therapist, if you're working in a center-based program. My colleagues who have practiced energy psychology techniques for a long time, you know, are still in practice. You know, I don't think any of them have said, you know, I got to retire because I burn out. And, you know, they're still working out there into their 70s and 80s trying to meet the need. But that resilience is something, you know, there's something to be said for that.
Exactly right. This is work that you obviously love, and it really speaks to the essence to who you are, Mandy. I want to touch upon some of the incredible services you provide, from counseling, consulting services, and so much more, because you're in a rare position of even gaining experience every day and early on with the first generation of energy psychology leaders in the field, with over 20 years of experience making you a master in the art of using these energy therapeutic techniques for your clients. And you've also had the opportunity to assist in teaching these techniques to much more, you know, seasoned clinicians who were joining in the ranks of the expansion of the field of energy psychology, you know, even well before the turn of the century. It's incredible the investment you've made in really becoming the expert that you are. Let's talk about the variety of services that you offer and the uniqueness of what you do, of your approach. There's a lot of people out there, but it can seem like a blur to people. Well, who do I go to? And what is it about your approach and your methodology that is unique, Mandy?
On one of the podcasts I did, I talked about the misconceptions of therapy and sometimes what people think therapy is, such as if I go to talk to this person, I have to be emotional or I have to talk about all my feelings or I'm going to lay on a couch or someone's going to tell me what to do. And I say, well, that's not necessarily my style. And what I can offer and what I do offer is I'm a pretty direct therapist, and I'm kind of a get-her-done kind of therapist. So of course, when people are struggling and they come into therapy, let's just pick anxiety because that's just so prevalent these days. You know, they want to reduce their stress levels, that they have racing thoughts, that they're having trouble sleeping. You know, it's very important for me to establish short-term goals, which we all do, but I have a framework in my mind about how we're going to work through this when we combine, what I do, ABA, the behavior modification, and the energy psychology. So I provide a lot of psychoeducation at first about both of these modalities. And then I set up a plan. And my clients have homework. I will, you know, start them out on some of these take-home tools that they can use first or second session. It's pretty, we jump in right away. And, you know, they start to see relief, which gains momentum, and that's the behavior piece. I want to do more. They get more momentum to want to help themselves, to come back to treatment, and it really is a win-win. So I'm very goal-directed. These techniques allow you to make progress pretty quickly. Every individual is different. You can't always predict that. And then we can look at the next level of outpatient therapy, which is once we feel better or back to baseline, where do we go from there? And I can't tell you how many clients I've had through the years that have said, you know, once I feel better and, you know, my problems aren't, you know, they don't seem like problems anymore to me. You know, I've had therapists who just say, okay, I think you met your goals and we're done here. You know, go in peace, have a great life. And clients will say, well, now I kind of see life differently. I kind of don't know what to do with this necessarily. It's good, but it's different. So this is where the peak performance element comes in, that, you know, peak performance is really about us achieving our max in whatever arena that is. And quite frankly, we always, if we're over-focusing on one area, right, there's something that needs to be addressed in another area usually. So peak performance isn't just really a global phenomenon. It can be life domains. We can look at different life domains. We can look at our family life. We can look at work. We can look at leisure and see, you know, are we at peak performance in all of those areas? So not only do I start with people who come in with clinical issues or who are experiencing some distress, once those, it's kind of like layers of an onion. Once those layers are addressed, then we look at, you know, what's your best you? And we go for the peak performance end. So in my, that's how it works in my counseling practice for the most part. For my consulting business, I do a lot of different things. Sometimes I'm getting the people who are really high in peak performance and experience something that there's a shift in that. And so for the consulting practice, we just do sort of a little bit of an overview and analyze what that is. And, you know, I'm teaching them and how to use the EP tools for themselves. And so the consulting sessions can be shorter, not necessarily, it just depends. But they're also really goal-directed too. And what do you want to accomplish? You know, let's look at the other pieces of your lifestyle. You know, what isn't in balance for you? And that's, again, different for everybody. You know, just people talk about the work-life balance all the time. Some people are, you know, 75-25%, and that's what works for them. So whatever works for them. The other thing that I do in my consulting practice is I do work with organizations and other therapists to coach with, if they're learning EP techniques, how to use those for themselves. And for the organizations, I've done a lot of school consulting and teaching about autism spectrum disorders and perhaps even with adjusting curriculum or maybe just brainstorming what might be the best course of action for a particular child, you know, in the district or in their school setting. So my consulting business runs a lot of different courses. I also work with athletes too, so this goes along with the peak performance CEOs, high performers. Usually when a peak performer or somebody who is, you know, really feels like they're maximizing whatever they're doing anyway, if they experience a slip, most of the time, not all the time, but most of the time it's an energetic phenomenon or there's an energetic component to this, which guess what? That's where EP comes in beautifully to say, oh, you know, this is a specific reversal on this issue. Let's address this. Hey, this is exactly what I needed. Now that I'm aware of this, I can see that if this is going to happen again, I know what to do. So these tools, these EP tools are really amazing. And a lot of my colleagues do treat a lot of different things with them because they get to the root of the issue. You know, it used to be back in the day that people with addictions or eating disorders, you have to have specialized treatment for that. And that's still true. But there are emotional disturbances that are at the root of both of those that can be addressed through energy psychology. So there, EP just opens up a whole world for a lot of different healing.
It really does. And, again, you're so well-versed in it. It's extraordinary. It's not one size fits all. It's not a cookie cutter approach. And I just really, you know, applaud you for all the work that you do because you're all in. And that's what I think is fantastic. And you also do trainings for clinics, individuals, organizations, schools. Mm-hmm. So you really have an expansive array of additional services, which I think come to fruition. I encourage folks to go to the website www.mandyfridger.com, and I'll spell that out for everybody. That's MandyFrieger.com. That's MandyFrieger.com to connect with Mandy. She knows what she's talking about. She's all in. She loves it and is quite an expert at all of this. And thanks for sharing all of this time with us on our series together, Mandy. Thoroughly enjoyed it, and I hope you did as well, and very enlightening and inspiring and hopeful. Obviously, again, this is in your DNA to do this incredible work, and we applaud you for all of this work. And hopefully we get a chance to expand some more. That would really be a pleasure. I thank you for joining us on the show.
Thanks for having me. I hope people have learned or, you know, their own light bulb went off and said, hey, I'm going to reach out and maybe do this thing or that thing. So that was the goal today and last week. Hope
Absolutely.
People are motivated.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, and we'll look for the upcoming book, too, From Exhausted to Energized, The Autism Spectrum Disorder Caregiver's Guide as well. Congratulations on that. We'll chat again, Mandy. Thank you so much for joining us. Jim Master is here thanking you for your time this time till next time as well. Thanks for joining us on Close Up Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be back with another great guest as well. Till then, have a great day and bye for now.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.